We're all familiar with that idea of a movie being made entirely in one take. Recently, we've seen it in films like 1917, Birdman. But going back farther, Alfred Hitchcock did it with Rope. And there are places in these movies where the cuts are hidden. So, you know, you could change reels in the case of Rope, other things like that. There were some that truly did do it in one take. My guest today is Philip Barantini, who you may know from his acting career. He's been in front of the camera a lot in many things, including Band of Brothers. Philip took a turn behind the camera with a short, Boiling Point, that he now has out as a feature by the same name. Boiling Point is a one-take film. But here's the thing. It really is a one-take film. I didn't even know that until I talked to him today and learned it through the course of this interview, which totally changes the dynamic and the questions, because once you know that it is a 90-minute take, and then you find out that COVID struck and lockdowns happened while they were in production, the whole thing changes course. So I invite you to enjoy listening to Philip talk about all of that and more on today's interview. Thank you again for being here and taking the time. There's a lot to talk about here. This is an amazing and unique movie. And for no film school and our listeners, that in and of itself is exciting. You know, the manner in which you made it, I want to talk about that. The short, I want to talk about that. But I feel like we have to start really with just, you have had a prolific acting career, been in a bunch of things that everybody's familiar with. And I'm wondering, how does that help or hinder your path to getting behind the camera directing something? Does it aid a lot? Does it get in the way in some ways? Does it inform the process?
Yeah, it definitely did, because, I mean, you know, for many, many years, I was an actor for 25 years. And for, you know, I'd say, a lot of that time, I'd always been interested in, you know, behind the camera and how it all works and stuff like that, and, you know, directors. And so, you know, I was subconsciously learning, you know, how it all worked on sets whenever I was on sets as an actor. So, I guess when I decided to try directing, you know, for many, many years, I wanted to do it, but I never had the confidence, because I'm from a town in Liverpool in the UK called Highton, which is a, you know, a relatively small town, but people from Highton, in my mind, we don't become directors. It's, you know, that's for like the educated people who...
You said Liverpool, and so you became an actor and a pretty successful one, and the Beatles came from around there, right?
That's very true, very true, yeah.
But so you felt like we don't become directors.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always put directors on this sort of like high sort of platform, you know, because I look up to directors as an actor, you always do. But for many, many years, I burned desire to do it, but never had the confidence in myself to do it and make the leap, until the most terrific thing in my life happened. My mom passed away quite suddenly 5 years ago. Everything changed. It just made me go, you know what? Life is so short. Like, let's just give it a go and see what happens. And what's the worst that can happen, you know? And actually, funnily enough, I spoke to, you know, then I started to go, right, how do I go about this? I want to make something. How do I go about it? So I got in contact with an old friend of mine, Bart Raspoli, he's the producer of Boiling Point. And I said, look, I want to direct something. I want to, you know, try my hand at it. Do you recommend
How did you know him? Just curious, like, where did that connection come from?
So he was an actor as well. We worked together on Band of Brothers. You know, 20 years ago. And so, and we stayed in touch, you know, I've stayed in touch with most of the guys. We're all really close. And so I said to him, can you recommend any good film schools? Cause he was producing at that point. He'd done a few movies, and I said, yeah, do you know any film schools? And he said, dude, you've been in film school for most of your adult life. I'm like, oh yeah, actually you're right. I didn't think of that. And then, you know, when you start to think, okay, yeah, I do. And he's like, you know how it works. You know about this, you know about that, you know, the crossing the line and all the technical things. I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah. And he said, and you know about actors, you know how actors think, and, you know, actors, because you are an actor. I'm like, absolutely right. Yeah. And so I made a short, and, And yeah, the moment I got on set, I was like, this just feels right. I feel incredibly comfortable. And that was it for me. Then it was just like, you know what, this is the path I want to take, and I'm never going to look back, hopefully. And you know, touch wood, it's been amazing so far.
So it was just his own vote of confidence in your ability, because you had been on set so much and seen so much, that you thought, I guess I do kind of know. Like, then you felt like, I can do this. Like, I can show up. And there's no, like, imposter syndrome of, like,
there's always imposter syndrome, and I think there always will be. And you know, imposter syndrome is a thing, and it's real, and happens to everybody. It happens to the biggest producers and directors out there. You know, everybody's like, I'm going to get found out. That's the way I feel. You know, right. One minute someone's going to tap me on the shoulder and go, you're not supposed to be here. Get out of here. You know, but as long as you can put that to one side and go, you know what? I'm not going to listen to that. I'm just going to keep going forward. And yeah, I guess it was him saying that, and something clicked in my mind. I was like, but even up until, I still had doubts in myself up until the point, even when I was on set, you know, you're sort of like, I've never directed an actor before. I've never had to speak to an actor from the level of a director. And what was funny was the first sort of day on set, I was, for my very first short film that I did called Seconds Out.
Right.
You know, the very first day I was on set, I was like, you try and hang out with the actors because I'm an actor, right?
Yeah.
But then there's this like weird like thing where they kind of keep quiet when I walked over there, or, you know, they'd be like, all right, well, and I felt like, actually, do you know what? I'm actually the director now. So there's not like that. The actors are hanging out together.
Is different, right?
Yeah, and then now I'm hanging out with the crew.
They're very divided, right? Everybody has their group.
Absolutely. And now I'm, you know, I'm trying to hang out with the crew, and obviously a lot of the crew, they've been in the industry for years. So, you know, they're talking like technical stuff and banter together. And I'm like, I'm just trying to hang out and be like, I know about that.
You didn't belong anywhere.
I didn't belong anywhere.
Streamlining the post-production video editing process just got a whole lot easier with Spider Checker Video. It's a handy, portable tool designed to leverage how video is processed when working with vector scopes, waveform monitors, and editing software. Included is a patent-pending color pattern card that generates an easy-to-understand pattern of hues at 2 saturation levels, so you can see how all colors between primary and secondary colors are being captured. The result? You start off with more accurate color at the start of your video shoots, so you have less color editing to do later. Now you can save $20 off the purchase price of DataColor Spider Checker Video. Just visit datacolor.com/NFS and enter code NFS at checkout. Offer is valid in US and Canada through 6/30/24.
Tell me, like, so Seconds Out was the first short.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the, okay, carpe diem, you know, like, see, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And then was Boiling Point kind of in your mind somewhere as like, that's the thing? Like, did you have this idea? Because I know you also did another feature, and then, you know, before Boiling Point became the feature, like, you know, when a lot of filmmakers, especially at the starting out level, the first feature level, what's the idea that's going to get that movie made? And for you, was this one kind of like percolating, or was the desire to direct, like, what came first, the desire to do it or the idea? Like, this is a story I'm going to tell.
Well, going back, you know, a few years, when I was acting, I wasn't always on sets and I wasn't always working. So I needed to make some money at times, you know. So I started working in kitchens, and I started from the bottom, you know, as washing dishes and pots. And then I worked my way up. After over 12 years, I worked in kitchens. And after 10 years, I became a head chef. Because I was so, you know, I became really passionate about it. And it sort of overtook my life in a way. And it was really difficult to juggle the acting. And when you get to a certain level in a kitchen, you know, you become the boss, I guess, and people are relying on you. So, you know, I couldn't go to auditions because I had to be in work. And it was a really, like, tough moment. So, but all the time I'm thinking, I don't know whether I want to do this. I want to, you know, my heart is in the creative industry and being, you know, directing and acting. And I just every moment, every so often I get this like really like sad feeling, like, oh, you know, I just really wish I was back doing that, really. And so, but during that whole time, I had witnessed a lot of things. And I'd always thought to myself, this world is absolutely ripe for drama and It's just got the characters and the things that I'd seen and witnessed and, you know, the ups and the downs. And
yeah, the personal link to it is critical, right? Because yeah. that gave you the insight into it. You could write and direct from a place of authority. It's oddly similar to the way the chaotic energy of productions.
Absolutely. Too, sort of. Absolutely.
So yeah. there's something there that there's a crossover, but yeah, it really burns people out. And I think your approach to this, the feature being this kind of frenetic, you know, energetic, like kind of the one shot thing like this.
Yeah.
Was that always baked into your ideas here? Or were you like, you know what, like, where did that come into play? Were you like, it's always going to be that? Or did that evolve?
That evolved, really. Yeah. I mean, when we did the short film, we sort of talked about doing it in a conventional way with, I'd always wanted it to be erratic and quite quick, fast paced and overlapping dialogue and all this kind of stuff, because that's what it's like in that world. So when I spoke to my cinematographer, Matthew Lewis, we talked about various different ways of shooting it. And then it wasn't a joke, but it was like, almost like, oh, we could just do it in one take. And we were like, oh my God, we could do it in one take. And then we started to think, oh yeah, we could, we really could. And then because we do that, and then we go over there, and then and you know, so that's how the show came about, and we got really excited about it. And then I always sort of knew that I wanted to do a feature. And so we didn't know how the show was going to do, you know, as you never do when you make anything. You hope people are going to like it, but the show went into various festivals and it did really well, and people, you know, really responded to it really positively. And so we were like, okay, we are definitely going to make a feature then. So the first person, obviously, we had spoke to was Stephen Graham, who plays the lead in it. And we started to write it. I started to write it with my writing partner, James Cummings. We were like, so, okay, let's think about how we're going to do this feature. So again, we did the same thing. Let's do it conventionally with cuts and, you know, edits and things like that. And then it was just, again, it was just wasn't exciting me. I was just like, you know, and then I thought, I was on the set of Villain, my first feature, and I was just sat up in bed one night and I was like, I had a restaurant in my mind for the feature because I'd worked in this restaurant and it was like my best friend is the owner of the restaurant. Mm. And I worked at the restaurants a few times, helping them out and stuff like that. So I knew the layout like inside out in my head. Mm. So I sat up in bed and I was like, oh my God, we could go through there and then we come back. And it just all started to come. And I couldn't sleep the whole night. And I'm just thinking about, and I'm blocking out the moves in my head and things. And then when I woke up in the morning, I was actually staying because Matt Lewis was the cinematographer on Villain as well. And we were living together, which I like to do. We like to live together when we work together, because then we're just completely in each other's pockets the whole time, you know, so we can talk about the movie nonstop. And so I think I may have woke him up and I was like, dude, we're doing Boiling Point in one take. He's like, what? And I was like, yeah, the whole thing, we're doing the feature in one take. And the reason behind it, really, I didn't want it to be like a spectacle, you know, something really clever. Look how clever we are. We've done this movie in one take. Because the truth is, when you're in that environment in a restaurant, it is one take and you don't get chance to stop or cut or leap forward an hour or, you know, rewind and go back. You're on the train and you're going forward and that's it. So, and that's the same in life, you know, and this movie is a slice of life. It's a slice of an hour and a half of this dipping the audience into this world and then pulling them back out again after an hour and a half. And that was the main reason, really, for doing it that way. And it, you know, obviously I spoke to Stephen Graham and said, how do you feel about doing it, the feature in one take? And he was like, are you insane? I was like, I think I might be. But what he's saying, he's like, oh, let's do it, man. Let's do it.
That's awesome. I found that, you know, it keeps you glued, right? Mm-hmm. It keeps you engaged. And it's funny when you say, you know, you went back to the model of edits and regular, you know, traditional, you know, we're going to do it that way. And then it came to you, especially because you were on the set of your other movie, something that was like, it's not speaking to me. It's not exciting. Like, what pushed you? Well, what got you on that other feature? What, did that come off of the short? How did you get involved with
it? Bart Rispoli, the producer, who he produced Boiling Point, the short, he sort of said to me on his way, when we wrapped Boiling Point, the short, he was driving home back to London and he called me and he said, look, I've been thinking, I've got this movie, I've got this script. we've got the finance pretty much ready to go. It's really low budget, but I'd love for you to have a look at it and have a read and see what you think, because I think you'd be, you know, a great fit for it. And so I read it, and, you know, yeah, I thought it was great, and I thought I could put my sort of little spin on the story that we've seen a million times, but I wanted to sort of bring some heart and some, you know, a bit of vulnerability to the main character, and I got quite excited about it. And then we wrapped Boiling Point, the short, in December 2018, and then we were on set in March 2019 with Villain, the first feature. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It must be thrilling to jump into the new thing and have it immediately take over like this, right? just having it be like, you made this plunge, you weren't sure you could do it, and then quickly you were like doing it a lot. And not only did you do the short, you had a feature lined up, and then you were back to getting the feature of the short made. It's exciting. Can you tell me technically about achieving the one shot, like the thing you said about having the map in your mind, about, you know, having the actor on board and knowing it's crazy, but just in the technical, like actually getting it done, you know, like the cameras you use, the camera op, like, you know, all the places where you do have to sort of cheat a little.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, can you tell us?
Well, we didn't cheat at all. It's all one continuous take. There's no cuts at all or any hidden cuts. Yeah.
That's amazing. Cause like, you know, things like 1917, cause you gotta know, like, you know, like 1917, we all were, you know, amazed.
There's cuts,
but,
right?
You know,
yeah.
There's
cuts.
Or like Rope, like course, Hitchcock did it.
Exactly.
But there's cuts, right?
There's cuts.
Birdman,
right?
There's cuts.
But we knew that it had been done before with movies like Victoria, Russian Ark.
Yeah. I remember going
exactly.
to see Russian
me
Ark.
Too,
in the
me too, me too. And it blew me away, you know? And so I was like, this can definitely be done. It's been done before, right? So, you know, doing the short in one take, that was one take also, but that's 20 minutes. So, you know, we used the Arri Alexa Mini with that, and it was fine. You know, it was Matt Lewis, again, who's my cinematographer, he's also the camera operator. He had an easy rig on, and he was able to, you know, maintain that weight for 20 minutes. But then, you know, you decide to do a whole feature in one take, which is 92 minutes, then you start to run the risk of like SD cards running out and things like that. And so, and batteries and things. So we looked at the Arri Alexa Mini, and it wouldn't have lasted that long. So we did some research,
right.
and we found the one camera that the Sony Venice camera, you can separate the body of the camera from the sensor and the lens in what's called Rialto mode. And so we were able to put the body of the camera, we designed a rig, so it was on an easy rig, but then the body of the camera was attached to the Matt Lewis's back, and then the sort of lens and the sensor were over the top of the easy rig on a sort of a bungee cord. So he was able to distribute the weight across his body, so he was able to maintain that for 90 minutes. And look, the kid's 25 years old.
I was going to say, like, how's his body holding
up? Fiddle. Like, so I've got no sympathy for him, you know. But the main thing with the Sony Venice camera is that we found out that you can live swap SD cards, which was, you know, that was the eureka moment for us, because it's like, okay, so if we can swap out the SD cards while we're shooting, that is like, that this camera is made for us, you know. So we tested it.
Yeah.
You know,
did you ever talk to Sony? Like, I'm curious to talk to, like, you know, we just had coverage of the Sony
right,
Venice
right.
2 is
yeah,
out.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
curious, but like,
we did talk to Sony, just only to sort of figure out the technical side of things. It was, you know, and we used a company in London called Canning 24, which is a camera rental company. And they're actually good friends of mine. The owner is a good friend of mine. He was actually a runner on a show that I did many, many, many years ago, and we stayed in touch, and now he's like, he owns this, one of the biggest camera rental companies in London. So that was handy. So yeah, so Sony sort of were involved in a bit, you know, we were asking them technical questions about, you know, is this possible? Can we do this? Can we do that? But then we just tested it a bunch of times, and, you know, Matt would sort of walk around the workshop where the cameras were, you know, for an hour and a half, and then they'd test the swapping of the SD card, and, you know, they'd shoot it all. And then watch it all back, and it's like, you know, it was one, you know, it wasn't, there's no fault at all. So it was exciting. We were like, oh God, we're going to be able to do this, you know, and we're not just going to have to use like a, you know, a small DSLR camera or whatever, you know, we're going to be able to do it with a proper kit, like a proper kit, you know. And so, yeah, so then we, Matt and I, we got the location. So the location that I wished for in my dream, we got the location, and I spoke to my friend, and we were able to shut it down for 3 weeks.
How hard was it to convince him that it was to shut a restaurant down for 3 weeks? Like, that must have been a tough
ask.
Well,
you know, right? Money talks, doesn't it? So, you know, I mean, we didn't have a lot of money on this movie at all. It was incredibly low budget. But, you know, we just said, look, we sort of shut him down Monday to Friday, and then he would open weekends. And weekends are his busiest time anyway. So he was getting paid for the weeks, and then haven't been able to open for the weekend. So his customers weren't getting, you know, he wasn't losing anybody. So Matt and I would go in there every minute of the day, literally, and just map it out. And we would walk around, pace around the restaurant. And I would be, you know, in front of his camera, playing every character, jumping from here to there, and he'd follow me. And then, so the two rules that we gave ourselves from the beginning were that the first rule is the camera's never allowed to just float off on its own and just go and find something. It has to always be motivated by a person. And then the second rule was we never repeat a move. So we never go and do the same move twice. So once we'd got those two rules down, we were able to then, you know, just slowly map it out and walk it through. And then we'd walk it. So we'd do sort of beat by beat, and we'd go through the script, and, you know, there was no scene numbers in the script because we wrote the script in the POV of the camera. So it would say, and then the camera moves across here with this person, and then we go into the back kitchen and whatever, blah, 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 you know. So that's how we sort of walked it through. And then, yeah, once we got to the end of it, we do it again, and then we do it again. And then it's all about the muscle memory, really, then, you know. And then we bring the actors in and then rehearse with the actors. So then we sort of just built it in layers, you know, and rehearsed it a lot.
So how many times do you go through? It sort of becomes almost like a play. And because, unlike, you know, in 1917 or Birdman, like, it really is all one shot. So you do this, the 90-minute thing. How many times?
Well, originally, when we set out to do it, we were going to give ourselves 8 times. So that was going to be 4 nights, twice per night. So we'd do 90 minutes, then we'd have a break. I would give all the notes to everybody. We'd eat food. Everybody would eat dinner or food or whatever, and then we would reset the whole restaurant, and then we'd do it again. That was the plan, 8 times. But this was in March 2020, so COVID was like a black cloud looming over us, literally.
Amazing. I did know, like, that you just added like a whole chapter to this podcast. Right. That we probably don't have time to talk about.
So, you know,
that's crazy. Yeah. I assumed you must have shot before. Because
so we'd rehearse for 3 weeks, and then we had the weekend off, and then we came in on the Monday. During the whole 3 weeks, you know, COVID in the UK where we shot it, COVID was, you know, this thing that was sort of whisperers, and everybody was, you know, told to wash their hands, but nobody was wearing masks. We were all hugging each other. There was over 150 people on set at one moment.
Yeah, March, I feel like, you know,
But then when we started to rehearse, like, people were starting to get nervous and saying, should we be doing this? Like, I mean, you know. And then so we finished the rehearsals on the Friday, and then we had the weekend off, and the news, everyone was watching the news over the weekend, and it was just like, oh, this is getting scary now, you know. And so came in on Monday, you know. And we shot it first go, great. Shot it the second go, great. Okay, this is going to be great. We've got another 6 goes. But, you know, those first two were good. But we sort of treated them as if they were like dress rehearsals, really. Because I knew that we had another 6 goes, and I knew we were going to get the take we wanted. So that night when we got home, it was really late, really super late. And the producers called me and they said, unfortunately, we're going to have to shut this down after tomorrow. I was like, what do you mean? Just like, well, we've lost 4 crew members. They're not coming back tomorrow because they're petrified. You know, they lived with elderly parents and they were scared, you know, so they didn't want to be involved. And so we had to recrew some of the camera team. And so the producers were getting incredibly nervous. I was getting, you know, I was stressed out anyway because of the logistics of the movie and trying to juggle everything. And so, yeah, so the second day we did it twice. And then we were like, okay, that's a wrap, guys. We've got to go home. And I was just, I think everyone was just stunned, wow. You know? And then literally 2 days later, the whole country went into lockdown. And so we were so lucky.
It must have been, because I remember, you know, we run a film news site. Tom Hanks was positive the NBA shut down, the National Basketball Association. It all happened one day. We broke all that news and it was crazy. And it was sort of like, it turned the whole, like in a snap, you know, everybody went from what's going on here to, oh, we're not leaving our house. Yeah. And you were in the middle of a movie shoot.
Absolutely.
And you were only getting, and it was a one take deal. That's crazy. It's amazing to me to think about, I've never talked to a filmmaker who has the experience of, okay, we're doing the movie in one take. I'm going to give notes on the whole movie to everybody. And then we're going to do it again. Like, and we're going to pick one or the other and that's it. Like, how do you even begin to give notes to an entire crew and cast in a way that can be comprehended? I mean, I know just like my filmmaking experience and what I've been on sets with, like giving notes is such an art unto itself, like being direct, being concise, communicating things that people can actually change. How do you do it to everybody for the whole movie?
The way we did it was literally like, I had my writing partner with me the whole time. So he was always on set. Obviously when I call action, I'm behind a false wall watching a monitor and I can't cut, right? So, well, I certainly don't want to have to cut. So I'm saying to him, we're writing the notes down and he's writing them down. And then when I do call cut at the end, then everybody's like so high energy and everyone's all over the place and, you know, whooping and high-fiving and all this kind of stuff. So I'm like trying to find various different people. And so in the end, I had to stand on a table basically. And everybody gathered around the table and I just had to point out to people. And, you know, I felt kind of like, it felt like a bit like a dictatorship really. It was like, but you know, I didn't have time to sort of go and find everybody and, you know, just giving notes to everybody in front of everybody else was a really, you know, because you like, certainly when you give an actor's notes, you sort of want to give that discreetly to them, just them, you know, but in this situation, we didn't have time to do that and I couldn't do that. So, you know, I had to just not call them out, but you know, there was no bad notes ever anyway. It was sometimes just like notes about marks and, you know, maybe don't say that or say a bit less next time. Things like that. So it wasn't like, oh, you're really crap. Don't do that again. You know, it wasn't stuff like that. It was
right.
small notes, sure. But that was the only way I could do it really. It was stressful, really stressful.
Yeah. I can only imagine because you're talking to everybody at the same time, balancing constructive criticism with stuff that's useful, with not being too harsh, with what everyone else is going to think, and being on the table.
Yeah, I know. And actually, we got a lot of footage of it because we shot lots of behind the scenes footage from the writing of the script all the way up to casting to then, you know, rehearsals and then the shoot. And now we've been asked by, you know, all of the sort of distribution labels that they want to see a documentary. So we're making this 30-minute documentary at the moment about the behind the scenes. And actually that me standing on the table is in there.
I hope. Yeah, I was going to say, I really hope we get a hold of that so we can show it because, you know, it's a filmmaking website. It's perfect. But I mean, it's amazing. I feel like there's so much more to talk about, but I appreciate that we've had a chance to discuss it. And I can't wait for more people to see it too, because it's a real, I love that you really went for it and you did the one shot and you didn't hide cuts.
Thanks,
and that's
man.
So cool.
I appreciate it.
Congratulations.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks again.
All right. Take care.
Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you, Philip, for coming by. It was really interesting to hear about how you direct people in one take, truly. Sort of a unique thing. Excited for this film and for people to see it and appreciate all that went into it and to see what Philip does next. Be sure to check out our other interviews through our back catalog. There are many with many great filmmakers, including Edgar Wright from Last Night at Soho, the cinematographer and editor for Dune, one of the best movies recent memory. Please also make sure to check out next week when we drop an interview with Dolph Lundgren, who is another actor who is taking a step behind the camera and has a really fascinating life story that we dig into. Thanks for listening.